You're listening to Audio Journal. Up next are articles and stories from Reader's Digest. This program is funded in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Holly Miller, and I'm your volunteer reader. I was a volunteer for Audio Journal when I lived in Massachusetts. I've since moved back to my home state of Texas, but I'm thrilled that I can continue volunteering for Audio Journal by recording this program remotely. I'll begin my program today with the cover story, Rise and Dine, the Best Breakfast in Every State, by Emily Goodman and Emily Tyra. Alabama, Golden Eagle Syrup, Short Stack's Buttermilk Biscuits and Warm Waffles all deserve drizzles of this honey-flavored, honey-colored syrup. The slogan on the bottle says it best. This stuff is the pride of Alabama. Folks in Fayette feel especially proud, given that the factory has earned them the town nickname Syrup City. Alaska, Reindeer Sausage. Made with a mix of meat, reindeer, which is domesticated caribou, beef, and pork. These sausages sizzle alongside sourdough pancakes, a staple since the gold rush, when prospectors kept sourdough starter on their person to keep it alive. Yeast was hard to come by on the frontier. Arizona, breakfast burritos. Soft tortillas, swaddled seasoned potatoes, scrambled eggs, and melty cheese, creating a portable protein-rich parcel, made all the more eye-opening with spicy chorizo, chilies, and fresh salsa. Arkansas, biscuits and chocolate gravy. Some like their sauce thin and silky. Others prefer it almost as thick as pudding. But either way, when buttermilk biscuits are anointed with a ladle full of soppin' chocolate, you'll want to soak up every delicious drop. California, avocado toast. The Golden State harvests about 90% of American-grown avocados, which makes hearty and heart-healthy meals when spread on multi-grain toast. In a land of such agricultural abundance, you can pair avocado toast with a fruit smoothie and hit your five-a-day nice and early. Colorado, Denver omelet. Eggs, ham, peppers, onions, and sometimes cheese. You know this diner classic, also called a Western omelet, but did you know it was first served between slices of bread? The Denver sandwich, which was popular in the country around 1950. Nowadays, the toast is more likely to come on the side. Connecticut, French toast. Stars Hollow isn't real. Sorry, Gilmore Girls fans. But Connecticut has lots of quaint little towns like it, along with diners, like Luke's, where French toast was the longtime special. Nutmeggers know their namesake. Spice is essential to the batter, adding another layer of cozy comfort to the brunch favorite. Delaware, Scrapple. These bricks of pork scraps, cornmeal, and spices are big throughout the Mid-Atlantic. But Delaware makes the most of them. Don't dwell on what's inside, just focus on their taste, similar to sausage, and texture, crispy on the outside, tantalizing tender in the center. Florida, guava pastries. While visitors to the Sunshine State might start their day with Mikey's waffles, many residents prefer pastelitos, or little pastries, a familiar term even among Florida's non-Spanish speakers. These flaky glazed Cuban delicacies come with a variety of fillings, some of them savory. But the classic is guava and cream cheese. Of course, what better to wash them down with than a glass of fresh squeezed orange juice? Georgia, bacon. Before Banana Ball blew up, the Savannah Bananas' main rival was the Macon Bacon, a summer collegiate baseball team with a mascot called Kevin. Get it? In 2023, the city of Macon added a bacon trail featuring 19 local eateries with recipes that celebrate the beloved breakfast side. Try all 19, not exactly a hardship, and earn a season ticket to see the Macon Bacon play. Hawaii, Bam Musubi. The canned meat, pan-fried to perfection with a sweet soy glaze, perches atop sticky rice sprinkled with furikake, a Japanese seasoning mix, all tied together with a strip of toasted seaweed. This grab-and-go bite is the total package, ready to jumpstart busy mornings and breezy beach days alike, with the sweet and umami punch locals love. Idaho, hash browns. Let's call a spud a spud. Idaho produces more potatoes than any other state. Many of them are destined for the shredder, then the fryer, before being served across the country. In fact, the 24/7 breakfast chain Waffle House sources its spud strictly from family farmers in southeastern Idaho. Illinois, apple pancakes. Lines start early at legendary Chicago pancake houses Walker Brothers and Apple Villa, where the size to share baked apple pancakes come with a custardy interior and a bounty of caramel-sized Granny Smith apples on top. Indiana, cinnamon rolls. Rolled by expert hands and baked to nearly the size of your head, gigantic and generously frosted cinnamon rolls are a must-eat attraction in Indiana's Amish country, including at the region's famous huge flea market. Iowa, Casey's Breakfast Pizza. Far from leftovers, these pies at Casey's, the Iowa-based gas station and convenience store chain, are meant for the morning, with cheese sauce or sausage gravy on pizza crust, plus scrambled eggs, cheddar, and mozzarella, topped with bacon, sausage, or veggies. Grab a slice with a coffee, maybe a scotcheroo too, and breakfast to go is served. Kansas, hash brown casserole. Expect a hearty plate in the heart of America. Eggs, bacon, pancakes, and, perhaps, the morning glory of them all, hash brown casserole. The homey delicacy combines hash brown potatoes with cheese, your choice of cream of soup, and a crispy buttery topping. Cornflakes are a common choice. Kentucky Breakfast Hot Brown. The standard version of this open-faced hot turkey sandwich with bacon, tomato, and Mornay sauce, which is a cheesy béchamel, could be considered a brunch item. But many Kentucky cafes move it to breakfast territory by putting it on an English muffin or a biscuit and adding an egg or two to the equation. Louisiana Beignets. Big easy mornings come with a shower of powdered sugar over hot, plump squares of fried dough that visitors and locals alike line up for. Between bites, sipping a slightly bittery chicory coffee balances the beignet's sweetness. Maine, ploys. Not quite crepes, ploys, which rhymes with boys, are similarly thin, griddled goodies that cook on just one side, no flipping necessary, with only 5 ingredients, buckwheat flour, baking powder, salt, and water. They let their toppings, including other Maine specialties such as blueberries and maple syrup, be the stars of the show. Maryland, Crab Benedict. Eggs Benedict meet the Chesapeake Bay. The breakfast classic of poached egg and Canadian bacon on an English muffin with hollandaise sauce gets a simple swap here. Crab meat for the Canadian bacon. Massachusetts, corn muffins. One of just a handful of states with an official state muffin, Massachusetts picked the corn muffin. Perhaps it grew tired of the cranberries in 1986. Bay Staters' beloved Dunkin' Donuts also deserves a mention here. Although not all Dunkin' locations carry corn muffins, many in Massachusetts do. Michigan, cereal. Battle Creek, Michigan also answers to the name Cereal City. It's where W.K. Kellogg created cornflakes and C.W. Post struck gold with grape nuts, latching a long line of easy meals and enthusiastic mascots, including Toucan Sam and Tony the Tiger. Minnesota, breakfast hot dish. Casseroles are cultural phenomena in the land of 10,000 lakes, where you're more likely to hear them called hot dishes. The standard morning model has eggs, cheese, and sausage with tater tots on top, don't you know? Mississippi, grits. No single southern state is the ultimate authority on grits, but they are massive in Mississippi, where they combine with notoriously creamy Mississippi Sin Dip, which features cheddar cheese, cream cheese, and sour cream, into one sumptuous and scrumptious casserole. Missouri, homemade Pop-Tarts. Ever since it was reported that Taylor Swift had baked homemade Pop-Tarts for Travis Kelce and other Kansas City Chief linemen to celebrate a win in the 2023-2024 season, similar toaster treats have popped up at pastry shops all over the Show Me State. Montana, Huckleberry Pancakes. Tart sweet huckleberries find their way into all kinds of treats here, like bear claws and the coffee cake called Huckleberry Buckle. Families fold freshly foraged huckleberries into pancake batter and griddle it up with pride. Nebraska, breakfast Runza. Fans of the fast food brand Runza have been begging for a breakfast version of its eponymous pocket sandwich, which features ground beef and cabbage. The chain occasionally acquiesces, albeit at select stores and on specific days, often to raise money for charity. When a Lincoln location offered ham, egg, and cheese Runzas one day in April 2025, the last one was gone by 9 a.m., and the store collected $1,600 in donations. Nevada, steak and eggs. Whether or not you've been up all night, which happens in Vegas, juicy steak and eggs, Stegs for short, with a side of crispy potatoes and toast will get you back on track for the day ahead. New Hampshire, corned beef hash. Irish immigrants breathe new life into dinner leftovers of boiled corned beef, cabbage, potatoes, and onion by chopping and frying it all up in the morning. Some folks add beets and call it red flannel hash, a nod to the color and to the attire of New Hampshire's lagers. New Jersey, Taylor ham pork roll. The only debate at the Garden State over its favorite egg and cheese sandwich is what to call the meat inside it. Taylor ham to those in the north and pork roll to those in the south. New Mexico, huevos rancheros. In the land of enchantment, breakfast comes with a question, red or green? That is, which type of Hatch chili sauce to top a plate of sunny-side-up eggs nestled on lightly fried tortillas? Bean and cheese optional. On the side, a warm sopapilla dipped in honey helps take the edge off the spice. New York, bagels. It's no secret New Yorkers take pride in their bagels, often citing the softer water in New York City as the reason for their superiority. In reality, their method of boiling the bagels before baking them makes more of a difference. A simple smear of cream cheese will do, but hungrier New Yorkers from Brooklyn to Buffalo might go all in and make it a BEC by adding bacon, egg, and cheese. North Carolina, Krispy Kreme donuts. As long as the Hot Now sign is lit up, indicating that a fresh batch is coming off the conveyor belt, Krispy Kreme can be breakfast, lunch, or dinner to Tar Heels. But dunking an original glazed into a cup of coffee is a surefire start to a great day. North Dakota, caramel rolls. Also dubbed the Dakota Roll, this ooey-gooey goodie starts with a pan of pillowy soft cinnamon rolls baked in a pool of buttery caramel. Said with two syllables here, caramel. After cooling a smidge, the whole shebang is inverted, so the sweet stuff seeps into every swirl. Ohio. Geta, an admittedly Americanized pronunciation, goes back to German immigrants adapting their own version of Grützwurst, a grain-based sausage. The combination of pork, spices, and oats, which are right at home in Ohio, Quaker Oats got its start in Akron, has become a Buckeye staple. It's often sliced into patties, pan-fried till crispy, and served alongside runny eggs. Oklahoma, chicken fried steak. sooner salivate over chicken fried steak day and night, so it's up to the rest of the meal to make it feel like breakfast. Handy, then, that Oklahoma officials designated an entire state meal. It stars chicken fried steak, of course, but also includes sides that work well in the a.m., grits, biscuits, and strawberries. Oregon, toast with Marionberry jam. The deep purple of Marionberry is an Oregon original, developed in the state in the 1940s and grown almost exclusively in the Willamette Valley. It is sweeter than a blackberry and makes a juicy jam. Pennsylvania, chicken and waffles. Far from the fried fare you find in the South, Pennsylvania Dutch chicken and waffles features a creamy chicken stew, spooned over waffles that are often made in a grill pan, not an electric waffle maker. This is Amish country, after all. Rhode Island, Johnny Cakes. Our smallest state is deeply divided over these cornmeal pancakes, right down to how to spell them. Some prefer J-O-H-N-N-Y-C-A-K-E, or even J-O-U-R-N-E-Y-C-A-K-E. The biggest dispute, however, is over how to make them. In South County, for example, the cornmeal is combined with boiling water, and the cakes come out thick. In Newport County, it's mixed with cold milk for a thinner result. South Carolina, shrimp and grits, also called breakfast shrimp. This dish is a staple of the South, combining creamy grits with creek-caught shrimp from the South Carolina Lowcountry. South Dakota, Kuchen, coffee and Kuchen. Kuchen, German for cake, is a combo South Dakotians embrace from daybreak to dessert. This coffee cake is usually filled with custard and fruit, such as apples, peaches, rhubarb, or prunes, and it's often so sweet that many who partake in the ritual keep their coffee black. Tennessee, biscuits and gravy. Sure, lots of southern states lay claim to biscuits and sausage gravy, but in Tennessee, volunteers readily pour the peppery white sauce over buttermilk biscuits. Cracker Barrel, which first opened in Lebanon, Tennessee, before spreading into 43 more states, serves 200 million biscuits each year. Texas, breakfast tacos. Lone Star Mornings have come wrapped in warm tortillas since long before 2017, when breakfast tacos became the official state breakfast. The usual filling includes soft scrambled eggs, cheese, bacon, and beans or potatoes. Chorizo and cilantro may be optional, but in Texas, hot sauce is not. Utah scone. These scones aren't the traditional tea time variety. They're fluffy pillows of deep-fried dough, similar to sopapillas or fry bread, best served warm and slathered with butter, honey, or the best of both worlds, honey butter. Vermont, maple syrup. Whatever the vehicle for it, be it flapjacks or fresh snow, not kidding. Pure maple syrup is the only acceptable option in Vermont, which produces the most of it by a mile, more than 3 million gallons last year. Virginia, country ham. Nestled next to eggs or tucked into tender biscuits, country ham is king in the Commonwealth. One true southern staple sees it grilled like steak and served with red-eye gravy made from its own drippings and strong coffee. The bitterness of the coffee brings out the smoky flavor of the ham. Washington, coffee. Nutritionists may disagree, but in the state that gave us Starbucks, a cup of coffee, when large enough, can be breakfast in and of itself. West Virginia, buckwheat cakes. In these parts, folks gather for all-you-can-eat buckwheat feeds, an ode to the Appalachian resilience during the big frost of June 1859, when early settlers turned to hardy buckwheat when their other crops failed. In pancakes, it lends a toasty, slightly bitter note that's just begging for a good douse of sorghum syrup or apple butter. Wisconsin, Bloody Mary. If you're doing a drink before noon, you might as well make a meal of it. Sconies famously like their Bloody Mary's Bountiful, with celery, cheese curds, beef sticks, bacon, pickles, dilly beans, olives, and maybe even a little burger on top. Don't forget the sidecar, a small beer served alongside. It just might be the most Wisconsin way to start the day. Wyoming, cowboy breakfast. No fuss, no frills, just fuel. It starts with coarse coffee grounds, simmered in a pot over a fire, with a little eggshell in it to cut the acidity and help the ground settle before pouring. The rest cooks in cast iron, fried eggs, potatoes, and smoky elk sausage, all sizzling together in the skillet. Life well lived. Love, Dad. Need a shoulder to cry on? Maybe a gag to get you through the day? The men of the Dad Letter Project are happy to oblige. By Kylie Melnick. On a whim, Rosie Polnick posted on TikTok about her father, who had reached a point in his life where he was wondering what to do next. He loves writing letters more than most people love their kids, explaining that he has written her a letter every day through college, camp, adulthood. "Would you want a letter from my dad?" Polnick asked. "Or know someone who could use a little kindness from a retired professor with a killer signature and a fountain pen?" That was in July 2025, and Polnick expected a few people to respond. Instead, hundreds did. "My dad is so excited," Polnick said of her father, Buzz Ecker, who lives in southwestern Ohio with his wife, Betsy Ecker. Buzz and other dads Polnick has since recruited to respond to letter requests have spent hours writing to strangers. Polnick named the volunteer-run group the Dad Letter Project and started the website dadletterproject.com, which describes its mission this way: mail that makes you smile or cry in a good way. "It's very gratifying to be people's fathers who don't have one," Buzz says. "And it's very gratifying to write a letter to people who have never gotten letters from a father." An ocean away, Amy Woods was scrolling on her phone last year, trying to take her mind off the four-year anniversary of her father's death, when Pollock's TikTok appeared. Woods sent Polnick her address in Chatham, England, and a blurb about her father, though she says she didn't expect she would get a letter. But a few weeks later, an envelope arrived from abroad. Woods cried when she read the note, written by a stranger almost 4,000 miles away in Michigan. "It really reminded me of how much, oh, I feel like I'm going to cry saying it now, of how much love I have for my dad," says Woods. Buzz grew up receiving letters himself. His mother, Peg Painecker, wrote him hundreds when he went away to sleepaway camp, and when he studied English at Denison University in Granville, Ohio in the late 1970s. When it was time for Buzz's three children, Polnick and her siblings John and Annie, to attend sleepaway camp, Buzz wrote them letters, too. Polnick received so many letters that summer that any day one wasn't delivered, she figured someone at camp wasn't doing their job. Wherever Polnick went, she was assured a handwritten letter. Her dad wrote to her when she was a teenage counselor at a wilderness camp in International Falls, Minnesota, and when she studied strategic communications at the University of Kentucky in the mid-2010s. Even as many people shifted to texting to communicate. Then Polnick moved back to the Cincinnati area, about a 20-minute drive from her parents' house, and Buzz still wrote her letters every day. Polnick still has those letters, a few thousand in total, which she keeps in a red bin at home. Of course, writing to your daughter is very different from writing to a stranger. People who request letters tend to be dealing with a variety of issues, like grieving a loved one's death or a bad relationship with their dad. Some have recently become dads themselves and don't know what to do, while others are stressing from work, feel lost, or recovering from a breakup. Buzz wakes up about 4:30 a.m. to write about 4 hours each morning. Buzz doesn't know how much money he spent on postage and stationery for the project, saying the costs are less than the gratification that people receive and that I receive out of writing the letters. After he received his first of a handful of thank you letters from requesters, Pollock's mother texted her, "You made your father's day." Pollock, who works in communications, has found about 30 other dads to help Buzz. The dads have now mailed out more than 4,500 letters. One of the dads is Darren Timoney, her friend's father in Kalamazoo, Michigan, who used to drop encouraging notes into his son's and daughter's lunchboxes before school. After retiring from his banking career last June, Timoney was seeking a new hobby. "Now," he says, "I wake up in the morning a little bit more motivated." Timoney wrote the letter to Amy Woods in England, including the line that made Woods cry at her kitchen table. "As a dad, I am proud of you, and think you wondering and thinking about your hippie artist dad is really special." Woods said she had a complicated relationship with her dad, David, who died in September 2021 after suffering from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Woods stored the letter in a box with other memories that reminded her of her family. "But how long will it stay there?" "Forever," she says, "without a doubt." Everyday heroes, the alpha dog. To rescue lost animals, she climbs into places most of us avoid. By Sydney Page. Callie Clemens was close to falling asleep at around 11 p.m. last July 26 when an emergency message on the Facebook page she runs, Lost and Found Pets of Spring Branch and Spring Valley, caught her eye. A tiny black puppy had been spotted scurrying across the road in Spring Branch, the Houston neighborhood where she lives. Whimpers had been heard from inside a nearby storm drain, so there was likely another puppy, maybe more than one, stuck down there. Clemens sprang out of bed and drove to the scene. Once there, she heard desperate howls and whimpers from underground, echoing through the storm drain. She grabbed her son's toy flashlight from her car, pulled a metal grate off the drain, and shimmied down. "I wasn't very well equipped," Clemens says. "I was not expecting to go into the drain, but nobody else was around, and puppies were stuck in there. Somebody's got to do it." This was not Clemens's first foray into a storm drain. An animal lover and the mom of 7-year-old twin boys, Clemens is known in the Houston area for her rescue efforts. Aside from the Facebook page, Clemens also runs Paws Off the Street, an outreach program for needy animals. She has saved dogs and cats, as well as the occasional possum and raccoon. Over the past 9 years, she estimates she saved at least 100 creatures exposed to danger. After lowering herself roughly 7 feet down the drain, Clemens crawled through about 10 feet of a 27-inch-wide cockroach-infested tunnel before reaching an area where she could crouch and search. It was 700 yards of pitch black. "I heard splashing," Clemens says. She pointed her flashlight and saw two sets of eyes looking at her. The dogs ran off. Around midnight, staffers from the local Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals arrived and joined Clemens in the storm drain. They worked until 3 a.m. trying to track down the dogs. They were not able to find the two dogs that Clemens had seen underground, but they did find a female black lab mix puppy outside under a dumpster, which the SPCA took in. But there were at least two more puppies trapped below, and Clemens was not about to give up. She went home for a few hours of sleep, then went straight back to the storm drain, joined by several volunteers, including a local engineer who drew a map of the drain system. After several hours of searching, they finally found a tiny black pup. While Clemens was still underground, volunteers spotted the dog standing outside a small tunnel at one exit of the drain. "We were very excited," says Clemens, adding that the puppy weighed about 5 pounds and had parasites and ringworm. He was taken to a city pound and later adopted. That left one dog underground. Clemens climbed down the storm drain several more times to look for it, even leaving food, some of which they were glad to see later had been eaten. But the fact that Clemens had found an exit hole and had stopped hearing the dog's whimpers, made her confident that the puppy found its way out. In fact, she's pretty sure it's the same puppy that was found later and adopted through her program. Did you know that there are many ways to listen to audio journal broadcasts? You can listen to our live stream from your computer or tablet simply by going to our website at audiojournal.org. With a Wi-Fi connection, Audio Journal can also be accessed through your smart speaker. Simply say, "Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn," or "Hey Google, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn." You can also listen using a landline phone. For phone access, call Zeno Media at 1-712-770-1043. We also provide special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. Need one? Give us a call at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org for more information. You can also listen through local cable TV stations. Check our list to find your town by going to audiojournal.org/ways-2-listen. Oh no! Did you miss your favorite program? Not a problem. Look for archives on our website or the Audio Journal iPhone app at audiojournal.org/podcast-archive. Audio Journal is located at 799 West Boylston Street in Worcester. You can reach us at 508-797-1117 or at info@audiojournal.org. The Department of Wit. Dear Pet Sitter, The Most Eccentric Care Instructions Indulged by Judith Newman. When I left my golden retriever Monty with a pet sitter, I thought my 4 pages of single-spaced instructions were perfectly reasonable. "He thinks his real name is, what do you have in your mouth?" I wrote. "So please check frequently, or you will end up spending the night with Monty in the ER. There's something about writing out pet care instructions that shows just how much these animals rule our lives. During his long life, Monty racked up thousands in medical bills because of his passion for eating my underwear, which meant I had to be very explicit in the directions I gave his caretakers. This, it turns out, is surprisingly common. When I was a kid, my parents would drop me off at the babysitter, and their instructions were like, 'Make sure he stays alive,' says Fei-Fei Friedman, a graphic designer and dog sitter in Manhattan. But dog owners today, their instructions are as complicated as a Tesla's owner manual. In Reddit communities and on TikTok accounts, pet sitters often swap stories of over-the-top care instructions for animals, like dogs that need to hear Frank Sinatra to poop, or kittens that attack if their food isn't microwaved. "My boy will not get out of bed in the morning unless you say, 'Good morning, Mr. President,'" reads one post. "He needs his green monkey to sleep," reads another. "Don't be afraid if he keeps the tail down his throat for more than a minute. He knows what he's doing." "Do not say Jake Gyllenhaal, or she will start freaking out," reads a third. Key Cash, a pet sitter in Orlando, Florida, was once warned to keep the knives locked up, or the cat she was watching might pick one up in its mouth and try to stab her. "I laughed," she says. "Guess what happened? Cash assured me in an email that the cat had dropped the knife before there were any casualties." While these stories may seem outrageous, there are perfectly logical reasons why owners explain and over-explain instructions for their pet's care, says Nancy R. Gee, the director of the Center for Human-Animal Interaction at Virginia Commonwealth University. "For one thing," she says, "animals can't entirely grasp the concept of time, which can make a simple trip to the store feel like abandonment. You can explain to a young child that you're leaving and coming back," says Jane Greer, a family therapist in New Jersey who runs an Instagram account for her dog, Riley. "But with a dog they don't know, That may explain why guilt-ridden pet owners leave long lists of what Reddit pet sitters call enrichments to distract from the owner's absence, whether it's a t-shirt that smells like the owner or favorite music and TV shows that must be played on repeat. Brenda, the accountant, has a screen addiction. Rennie Weller, a jewelry designer in Los Angeles, says of her Malapoo. She tells sitters her dog needs plenty of TV time and instructs them to go to YouTube, search dog videos, and give Brenda hours of squirrels. According to a 2023 Pew Research Center study, 51% of U.S. pet owners say their pets are as much a part of the family as any human member. And Gee says, when people are asked to name those they trust most, pets will often be closer to their inner circle than family and friends. Many pet owners also feel a strong sense of emotional debt to their animals, says Greer. Human relationships are very tough, she says. Your pet may be the one non-judgmental being in your life. They'll love you even if you're not a very good person. Maybe that's the reason we indulge our pets' eccentricities and fears, no matter how absurd. Carol Mithers used to leave excruciatingly detailed instructions about her scrappy chow mix, Casey, including this warning. If you see or hear the Goodyear blimp, grab the leash tightly and get home as fast as you can. Casey was terrified of blimps. Once I had to literally lie on top of him to keep him from running into a busy street, says Mithers, who is the author of Rethinking Rescue, Dog Lady and the Story of America's Forgotten People and Pets. Rational or not, elaborate pet instructions are clearly a projection of our love. Gee says, we owe our pets and adore them, even when they're diabolical. That perhaps accounts for one ominous instruction left for a pet sitter who later shared it on TikTok. Jasper cannot be trusted. Good luck. The healthy, under pressure. Hypertension is on the rise, and it's linked to not only heart disease, but also stroke and cognitive decline. By Nina Agrawal, in the United States, nearly half of adults have high blood pressure or hypertension. Known as a silent killer, the condition can contribute to heart attack, stroke, and heart failure without ever causing symptoms. Although it was once thought to affect mostly older people, research now shows that an increasing share of people aged 35 to 64 are dying of heart disease related to it. Hypertension matters so much because it's the most modifiable risk factor for cardiovascular disease, stroke, and now the evidence suggests this may be true for cognitive decline, says Eduardo Sanchez, M.D., Chief Medical Officer for Prevention at the American Heart Association. Lifestyle changes and medication can help bring blood pressure down, which changes the trajectory very, very dramatically. When it comes to heart attack and stroke, he says, even simple steps can help get your blood pressure in check. It sounds obvious, but just knowing your blood pressure is a great place to start. More than half of people with uncontrolled hypertension aren't aware they have it, according to some estimates. Blood pressure, the force that blood exerts on your arterial walls, is measured in millimeters of mercury, or mmHg. It is given in two numbers. The top number, systolic pressure, measures the force when blood is pumped out of your heart. The bottom number, diastolic pressure, measures the force between beats when your heart is filling with blood. Normal blood pressure is below 120 over 80 mmHg. Above that level, Dr. Sanchez says, damage begins to occur to blood vessels and the organs they supply, including the kidneys, heart, and brain. It's important to have your blood pressure checked at least annually, says Jennifer Cluett, M.D., director of the Complex Hypertension Clinic at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Make sure it's measured the right way, with the right size cuff, and when you're sitting with both feet on the floor, have your upper arms supported at heart level and are not talking. The typical setting in a busy primary care clinic, where somebody's sitting on an exam table with their legs dangling and their arms not supported, while somebody is talking to them, is not the right way, Dr. Kluett says. Up to 30% of patients may also experience white coat hypertension, which is when blood pressure levels become elevated at the doctor's office. For this reason, blood pressure management guidelines recommend checking at home too, to confirm a diagnosis and manage the condition. It's important to understand your personal risk. There can be many causes of hypertension, says Fatima Coronado, MD, Associate Director for Science in the Division for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. The condition develops over time as a result of both genetic and environmental factors, including smoking, excess weight, and poor sleep. People whose parent or grandparent suffered a heart attack or stroke can be at increased genetic risk for high blood pressure, she says. Age influences risk because our arteries stiffen as we get older. Additionally, hypertension is more prevalent among men than women, and more common among Black people than most white, Latino, or Asian people, according to CDC data. Some women develop high blood pressure during pregnancy, which can be dangerous to the mother and the fetus. Martha Gulati, MD, director of the Davis Women's Heart Center at the Houston Methodist Hospital, says the condition should be treated during pregnancy, and women should be followed up by a cardiologist afterward because they are at increased risk of high blood pressure and cardiovascular disease. Diet also plays a major role. You've heard it before, eat healthy for your heart. Specifically, among 22 lifestyle changes and stress-reducing techniques for reducing blood pressure, the dietary approach to stop hypertension, or DASH, eating plan, was found to be the most effective, according to an analysis of more than 100 studies. One reason may be that it centers foods rich in potassium, an electrolyte that helps your body get rid of sodium and relaxes your artery walls. Sodium causes the body to retain water, increasing the fluid and the pressure inside blood vessels. Bananas aren't the only easy source of potassium. An avocado or one cup of diced cantaloupe contain even more of it than a medium banana. And citrus fruits like oranges are also rich in the electrolytes, as are leafy greens like spinach and Swiss chard. You can lower your blood pressure further by reducing your sodium intake, Dr. Gulati says. The American Heart Association recommends that people consume no more than 2,300 milligrams of sodium per day, and ideally, much less. In the United States, most of the sodium in people's diets comes from restaurant meals and processed foods. Cutting down on those foods, swapping a frozen dinner or a slice of pizza for the salad bar, for example, or making small changes in your food shopping can make a big difference. Look for low-sodium versions of sauces. Rinse canned beans and vegetables, which are often stored in salty water for preservation, before eating them. Alcohol intake is also associated with increased blood pressure. Doctors suggest aiming for total abstinence. The benefits of cutting back seem greatest for those who usually consume more than 2 drinks per day. Aerobic exercise, which strengthens your heart so it can pump with less effort, was the second most effective intervention after the DASH diet. Isometric resistance exercise, when you contract muscles and hold a position, such as wall squat or a plank, was the third. Isometric exercise can help blood vessels dilate, which improves blood flow. Exercise also reduces stress, as can meditation, yoga, prayer, and other types of religious practices, says Dr. Sanchez. And while exercise is beneficial, even if you don't lose weight, dropping excess pounds can also help reduce blood pressure, says Dr. Kluett. The goal of treatment is to keep the blood pressure below 130 over 80 mmHg, though under 120 over 80 mmHg is even better. Often that requires medication. There are several effective generic options that doctors can prescribe. Patients may need to take multiple types, which doctors say can sometimes be a deterrent. Single-pill combinations that include two or more blood pressure medications in one tablet are easier to take, while some medications may cause side effects, like frequent urination or leg swelling. Doctors can tweak drug regimens to mitigate those. Even if you're on medication, changes to your diet and exercise can still help and can lower your odds of all sorts of negative health outcomes. As Dr. Kluett puts it, lifestyle changes help more than just your blood pressure number. News from the World of Medicine by Kristen Gasberry. Sharp memory. A study in the journal Neurology found that eating cheese could play a role in dementia prevention. A team of researchers from Sweden's Lund University found that among nearly 28,000 Swedish residents over a 25-year period, more than 3,200 ultimately developed dementia. However, those who reported eating 1.7 ounces or more per day of high-fat cheese, defined as having more than 20% fat, such as cheddar, brie, and gouda, were 13% less likely to develop dementia than those who ate a half ounce or less daily. The protective association appeared strongest for people without a gene variant called APOE4, a genetic risk factor for dementia. In contrast, low-fat dairy showed no meaningful link to lower dementia risk. Shot of prevention. Only a handful of cancer types are currently preventable by a vaccine, and an aggressive breast cancer may soon be joining them. Anixa Biosciences announced in November 2025 that it had secured a patent for a vaccine that trains the immune system to attack alpha-lactalbumin, a protein typically present during late pregnancy and lactation, and also expressed in the majority of triple-negative breast cancer cases. The idea was first developed at the Cleveland Clinic, where phase one of the trial is projected to be completed this summer. If additional trials confirm its efficacy, the vaccine could be available by 2030, with priority given to those with genetic dispositions. Power Trio. Falling is now the leading cause of injury-related deaths among adults 65 and older, a result of muscle loss that begins around age 50. But a study by sports science researchers in China has shown a promising way to counteract natural declines. After analyzing studies involving more than 7,500 participants, the team determined that resistance and balance training effectively preserved muscle for everyday functional movement, like rising swiftly from a chair. Meanwhile, resistance training plus protein supplementation led to the largest increases in strength and muscle mass, and combining all three, resistance training, balance training, and protein, led to the largest improvements in other measures of functional health, such as grip strength, gait speed, and skeletal muscle index. Craving connection. Keeping a seat at the table for friends or family can improve key markers of healthy aging, while eating alone showed the opposite effect. After reviewing data collected across 10 countries, Australian nutrition researchers determined that those who routinely ate alone consumed less food, specifically fewer fruits and vegetables and less protein. Part of the research suggests that those who constantly ate alone were more than twice as likely to drop significant weight, a risk factor widely linked to higher rates of chronic illness and increased mortality in seniors. Cooking for and eating with others naturally encourages better habits, the team theorized, because social cues can be beneficial in facilitating eating behaviors. I got rhythm. Dancing, swaying, or finger-tapping to music is a common voluntary response that speaks to the power of sound to move us. But a recent study published in the journal PLOS Biology showed that our brains may be involuntarily sinking to the beat as well. Researchers at the Chinese Academy of Sciences played classical music to 123 non-musicians and measured their spontaneous blinks, the ones our eyes perform without our awareness. The team found that the participants blinking involuntarily fell in line with the beat. The effect may highlight how the brain processes, predicts, and adapts to sonic patterns in the environment, even when we are unaware. Your true stories. When I feel most American. Readers share the moments when their patriotism surges. By Reader's Digest Readers. From Bruce Mizell. The flag flying in my yard reminds me of those I saw at military posts all over the world while serving in the Army. I think of helping to preserve our freedoms in the United States and other countries seeking support. I'm also proud of my Hungarian wife's becoming an American citizen so she could enjoy the same freedoms and pledge her allegiance to the flag, too. It reminds me of those who have served, serve today, and will serve. From Diane Schroeder. Visiting Disney World or Disneyland feels quite American to me. It was all the plan of visionary Walt Disney, who had the tenacity and grit to make it happen, even though he had little more than a suitcase and a dream when he ventured to California. Still, he started one of the most recognizable companies in the world. His story feels like a fairy tale most possible in America. From Charles Gaston. Strangely, I feel proud when paying income taxes, and I've never objected to doing so. Someone else's taxes paid for the National Science Foundation Fellowship that allowed me to study engineering science. Those degrees helped launch a great career and earn income that goes toward taxes to hopefully fund for other opportunities like the one I received. From Cindy Hansen. My grandfather was a coal miner of Welsh descent, living and working in Pennsylvania. He built a summer cottage at Elk Lake in the Pocono Mountains, with lumber he got to keep as payment for tearing down an old house. To this day, I feel blessed to stay at the cottage every summer. My granddaughter is the sixth generation to enjoy the fruits of his labor. From Thuy Vu. I came to the U.S. from Vietnam as a refugee when I was 15. After years in the States, visiting Vietnam for the first time was emotional. I recognized my homeland, but it was no longer my home. I didn't feel that I belonged as I once did, and was reminded of how much the U.S. had changed me. That's when I understood. I'm an American now. When I cleared customs at LAX, an agent said, "Welcome home." Tearing up, I realized America really is my home. From Josh Urban. Sidewalk astronomy is a way to share the universe with strangers. It's like playing guitar on the street, minus the open case. I set up my telescope in a city park on a clear night, and the show begins. "Have you seen Saturn through a telescope before?" I'll ask passing strangers, inviting them to take a look. "I can see the rings. It looks like the photos," people exclaim with delight. "If you're not yelling, you're not seeing it," I say. "So where are you from?" They tell me in a tapestry of accents and places that take me around the globe as we wander across the sky with my telescope. It makes me feel hospitable, curious, bold. Sharing the universe is when I feel most American. Keep looking up. From Lisa Miller. My wife and I were vacationing in Colorado when two men walking by said, "Isn't it great?" with huge smiles. And they told us the Supreme Court had just legalized same-sex marriage on the federal level. We'd married years earlier when it became legal for us in California. But to cope, we often joked about the 1,138 rights we'd lose when we crossed state lines. But that day, we truly felt welcomed into the fold of America. From John Albert. A few weeks after 9/11, I returned to work in Lower Manhattan. My employer issued flag lapels, which I proudly wore. As I looked around my subway car, I realized almost everyone wore something similar. There's lots of diversity in New York City, but in that moment, we were all just Americans, looking at one another and nodding. I certainly don't miss the cause or its repercussions, but I do sometimes miss the camaraderie. From Ann Redig, flags, military bands, flyovers, and the star-spangled banners at sporting events all inspire patriotism. But I feel the most American when I see immigrants being sworn in as new citizens on TV news broadcasts, hearing the Pledge of Allegiance and acknowledging the hard work it took for them to reach that moment takes my breath away. From Ed Barrett. It sounds counterintuitive, but I feel most American when I disagree with U.S. policies and actions. Let me explain. I'm a Vietnam War veteran, fortunate enough to have returned home healthy, but I can't ever forget that 58,000 Americans died, and I don't always support our actions overseas. I take pride and comfort in being able to openly disagree with our government. And I feel most American when I criticize my country from a place of concern and love. From Joanne Gleason. Over-the-top events like the Academy Awards or the Super Bowl feel very American. We have the gift and ability to turn anything here into a moment of global participation. We're a scrappy group, and we take advantage of opportunities to create, succeed, and win. Well, that does it for our program today. You've been listening to Articles and Stories from Reader's Digest. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. This is Holly Miller, and I'll be with you again soon. Thanks for listening.
This is Bird Note. Don't be fooled by the gentle whirring sound of a hummingbird in flight. This male rufous hummingbird performs elegant and aggressive courtship displays to defend his territory, and he may travel hundreds of miles to find a mate. In the spring, rufous hummingbirds journey up the Pacific coast from Mexico to the northwestern corner of the U.S. Some go even as far north as Alaska. That's almost 1,000 miles one way for a bird measuring just under 4 inches beak to tail, making this one of the longest migrations of any bird relative to body length. But after completing one journey, the hummingbirds have to prepare for another. As fall approaches, they sip nectar and catch insects to pack on fat that will power their passage back to the tropics, this time taking the scenic route over the Rocky Mountains. But not all hummingbirds of the same species migrate at the same time. This male rufous hummingbird in the Pacific Northwest gets out of town early. He leaves the breeding grounds as soon as mid-June. Females stay behind to finish their nesting duties before heading south a week or two after the males, and their grown children trail after them in August. For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill. Did you know you can listen to Bird Note in your podcast app? Subscribe to Bird Note Daily and never miss an episode.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is The End by A.A. Milne. When I was 1, I had just begun. When I was 2, I was nearly new. When I was 3, I was hardly me. When I was 4, I was not much more. When I was 5, I was just alive. But now I am 6. I'm as clever as clever. So I think I'll be 6 now. forever and ever. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal and read by me, Nikki Whichello. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with poetic wonder.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.